Okay, so what we'll do now, do we have the microphones available? Okay, great. So what we're going to do now for the next approximately 15 minutes, I'll ask Bob to receive a set of ideas and then give him time to respond after you have a chance to give us your thoughts. And if you'd wait until you have the microphone so that everybody could hear. Okay, so does anybody... would anybody like to begin?
Hi. My name is Madeline Lansky, and I'm actually a psychiatrist trained in the U.S., which means that I've done a lot of work at Veterans Administration hospitals with a lot of wounded warriors, and I loved this. I thought it was fantastic. I'm a child psychiatrist, so I deal with all the boys who play the video games.
Child psychiatry is very useful for us in the SEAL teams.
I think it is. No, because they're adolescents. They are adolescents, and I think that we're living in a world where it's easier and easier to play kill. And I think you're talking about a group of young men who haven't been broken yet. And I'm thinking about all the veterans that I've treated doing PTSD work, post-traumatic stress disorder, and what they routinely say is, I got marketed a mythos, and nobody told me that I would have a broken body and a broken mind for the rest of my life. And so my concern is that we're not breaking young men fast enough about the reality principle of life, and that you only get to be a strong warrior for about 5 years, and that there's a real excitement in our culture where we like to watch young men bash and kill, and that they're being given up and sacrificed by all of us in this excitement. And I even wonder if there's a kind of perversion that's getting fed back by them when they become celebrities to question the whole idea of being used in this way as a kind of, we were talking about warrior archetype who is a thing.
On a similar vein, at our table, I think the consensus was coming around to the notion that the promotional film that you showed us was very sort of exciting, but the emphasis was very much on physical valor, you know, and maybe even a kind of discipline in terms of dealing with the anxiety of thinking you're going to drown, that sort of thing. So maybe what needs to be instilled in an earlier phase is the notion that there are more complex interactive skills having to do with working with groups, negotiating differences. So in a sense that people, in a sense, who are drawn to it are not surprised after 10 years to discover that that's what they're going to end up doing, because if it's sort of introduced as part of the whole earlier on, it might be more assimilated.
Hi, thank you very much for your talk. I understand that countries all over the world need these kind of elite troops, but it sounded to me like you're training a great deal of people for a task, kind of whether it's a Hector or Achilles type task, and there's not much work around. So wouldn't it be possible to reduce the size of the SEALs and in fact, you know, make them just a very small unit so that they're not a lot of young men hanging around wanting to do something that they've got nothing to do?
I was wondering about the archetypal issue. I mean, archetypes have the problem, it's not a problem, but it's part of an archetype that it has both sides. It has a positive and a negative side. And you cannot have it, you cannot have the positive side of having the warrior archetype in a way being addressed without the warrior coming out. I mean, this is impossible in a way. So the question is then, how do you find a different way of looking at what SEAL's doing? What kind of different archetype would be more helpful? And what about the feminine in this kind of whole game? I mean, it's a bit of a funny thing. If you want to talk about talking, relating, thinking together, then you need to think about a very different way of creating a different archetypal idea behind all this.
Thank you. That was it's a fascinating question. We were talking about it in terms of intergenerational, because of your experience in talking about your son and then having people who are a different generation than you. And it led to a couple of thoughts. And one was the thought at a structural level of, you mentioned that the movie, I don't remember the name of it, but there were active SEALs who participated in the movie. And then I know that recently the Obama administration, and this could be purely anecdotal, I don't know, got caught some heat for cooperating with the Hollywood movie about the bin Laden raid. And it made us think, why is it hard to stay out of that? Those seem to be points at which the military is in some ways insinuating themselves into the propaganda, into the mythos creation. And then we were thinking about, is there an unconscious process from the older warriors? You know, you mentioned the poem, and I was thinking of Tennyson's Ulysses, of being nostalgic about the young, beautiful warrior. And is this a way to keep that alive?
Well, thank you so much for that. It's been fantastically interesting. I just want to offer a couple of thoughts. One is that there seems to be this tension between discussing this as an organizational problem and thinking about it as a more of a social and cultural issue, which seems to me much more pertinent. It seems to me treating it as an organizational problem somehow misses the more profound dynamics, of which I want to say something about. First of all, I want to say I'm glad that we have these people who will kill on a moment's notice without thinking twice. I mean, that's something that I feel grateful for on my behalf, that this exists. And I'm not sure that in my opinion, we'd want this part of ourselves to be more reflective, personally. But I am reminded of something I read in the 1970s, something that really caught my eye and was part of what got me interested in psychoanalysis in general. I remember it very well from a book written by Charles Brenner called Basics of Psychoanalysis or something like that. And at the end, he says, it's not very surprising then, is it, that our national fathers are so willing to turn our sons into dead war heroes? And I remember that for whatever personal reasons that particularly struck me. But I remember that being a profound. And I think this is the level in which we're dealing with these questions about what are we about here? And how can we, what part of ourselves are we mobilizing and why? And how are the SEALs and these other parts of ourselves being, what are they expressing on our behalf? So that's where it brought me, and I thank you again.
We started with this idea that there was a challenge to be faced, perhaps, in enabling the young SEALs to face this narcissistic mirror of fame and fortune, and in a sense have to grapple with going through it to find, you know, what's behind it or what's the other side of it or what it's really about. We went on to talking about this K in relation to LNH. I dredged out of my memory that the quote from Clausewitz, which is that war is politics pursued by other means. And we were exploring the relationship to command that was implicit in going beyond the loyalty of the team, but actually to do your duty as requested by command. Steve honored us by, Steve here in the uniform, honored us by talking to us a bit about what it felt like to know that there were some seriously crazy things that they were being asked to do that made no sense at all, and indeed meant that they had to accept the possibilities of being injured in mind and body for a cause which they couldn't always look their wives and mothers in the eyes and say, you know, it was a good cause. So in other words, they were living with having to carry, in the best Hector tradition, I suspect, this dilemma. But it seemed to us that maybe in this space here, this other dimension of the relationship to command and ultimately to the president, was it maybe a clue to how you could begin to work this?
I have a sort of a question, two questions. One is, have you interviewed people such as Barry and I guess yourselves who have stayed in the SEALs and have believed in the ethos rather than the mythos and have been able to transform themselves into more patient, less warmongering types? Have you interviewed those people very carefully to understand what kinds of changes have taken place in them? That's a question one. And question two is, what Barry was telling us, that you've had all kinds of consultations and that somehow or other nothing that you've done seems to have worked to continue with the young guys you have, many of them beyond a certain point. So I'd like to know what has failed. What have you tried that has failed? And where are you going with this? How are you, what lights are you seeing in the future? I think everybody here could learn something from that. And I also thank you very much. Very interesting.
This is just a thinking. This is not a suggestion. But I'm thinking about, and we talked at our table about, in this economy, it's very hard to get work. And it's a very masculine, traditional thing to support your family and to have work. So it's, and I'm, by the way, I'm discounting my reaction and my thinking and wondering about this male-only organization being somehow managing in the U.S. not to have a problem without allowing women. I'm not going to there. But just this other piece is that if it's a mass, it's emasculating to not have work. And one place people, men, young men, are seeking work is in the military. And what better place to become more masculine, have your masculinity supported, but then to be in this wonderful Navy SEALs and all of its mythos. But once they get in, they're learning, or you want them to know, that the ethos is really the primary goal, and the ethos has tones of femininity in it. And so here they're trying, they've been emasculated, they're going into this male-dominated, masculine, testosterone-filled place, but they're given, you want to give them this feminine ethos. And so there is a huge dilemma here. And then we also, I just want to add a table, we had this discussion of, yet this organization is very, we've come up with, what is it, first the word maternal came up, in taking care of each other. And then we said, well, that's really fraternal here. And what is maternal, fraternal? And what is the term for systole, maternal, fraternal? But anyway, I think there's a lot of dilemma in here on how to create the ethos to be valid in the masculine world.
Look along the ridge over there. You will find, by the cemetery, shotgun emplacements that Roosevelt had built in 1943, which leads me to suggest that part of the mythos is about the need, the political need, to create a public knowledge of or acceptance of an ongoing war. Because when those gun emplacements were built, there wasn't a snowball's chance in hell that the Japanese has logistical support to make any use of them. But from this port, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of young men sailed to die in the South Pacific. So this last period, last two presidencies, perhaps there is a very different issue here from one that's internal to the SEALs that has to do with the political need that Ken Burns unearthed to make it real to the American people, and this is a side effect of that.
I'll be very brief. All I wanted to do is to share my own association, which is really in the public domain, that the myth of Achilles is known and has survived for centuries, not because he was a beautiful, young, fabulous warrior, but because of his Achilles heel, which is the point of weakness. And so I am inviting us to think what is the perceived or the real weakness and vulnerability in the Navy SEAL. Thank you.
We have the value of having Steve with us, and the issue of how do you get testosterone-filled moving into being advocates, diplomats, working at the coalface, say in Afghanistan, in the kind of developmental, educative role. How do you make that transition? How do people train for one thing, motivated by one thing, also do the other? Now, this seems to me something that we know a lot about, how you move from fight-flight into consolidation. We actually got into, with Philip and Mike, some models of how there might be a change of thinking. One is that to really expand the notion of politics being war by another means, for them to actually have a real space, a thinking reflective space, for thinking out what the politics on the ground might mean. The other was to not fight, this is what Mike came up with, to not fight the celebrity culture, but actually use it, not for the individual, but for the group, that this is a group who wants to make consolidation and connection and development pairing on the ground. So use it, not fight it.
I too want to thank you for this fascinating presentation. I would suggest that the problem is not for the young men, but for the old men like you. That the dilemma is, how do you, taking Jim's point, how do you preserve a warrior culture that will kill without thinking? How do you hold on to what we would call the paranoid position, where you kill without thinking, and at the same time hold the possibility of what we would call the depressive position, which is what Dr. Lansky was talking about, the recognition that there is death and grief and loss. And the dilemma is, if you have the second position, do you then hesitate before you kill? And if you hesitate before you kill, you've lost the warrior that we're trying to train. So that's why I think the dilemma is for you. And you seem to have a hold of it, because young men need old men to identify. And if their leaders are holding both parts and holding a reflective space without losing the impetus that allows young men to do crazy things, but holds the possibility that within that capacity is grief and loss and wisdom and knowledge, then you will be doing your job.
Thank you. Okay. Thanks, everyone, for the input. Now we'll turn it over to Bob for his thoughts and response.
I'm going to let you hear another voice. Captain, do you want to comment on what we've tried? Anything that you would like to say on what you've seen here this morning? And I'd also like to give the floor for a couple minutes to Master Chief when we're done as well.
First of all, thanks very much for letting us come talk to you. It's always awkward for me to be in the limelight and to talk about being a SEAL. My mother barely knows what I do. I don't talk to her about it at all. My kids kind of know what I do, but not really. So I'm naturally not good at talking about this. But with you, with a group like you who are so interested in helping us, I'm more than willing to spend a lot of time with you. I'll just say a few things. Some of the questions, I'll focus on just a few of the things that were just brought up, and I'll be willing to talk about women in the SEALs too if you want to do that later, because I'm interested in that as well. One of the questions is you asked, ma'am, was about have we interviewed people and found out what happened? Interviewed people that have embraced the ethos, that maybe didn't embrace it when they first came in, and what has happened and how have they evolved. I think those are hard to find. I think the people, they come in embracing it, or they embracing the ethos, or they embrace the mythos, and they don't, there's not a lot of, I haven't found a lot of guys that have changed substantively. So one of the guys that I think epitomizes it, and was one of our former leaders, was Eric Olson. He just retired as our leader, and he really, from the very time that he graduated from the Naval Academy the year before Bob, he embraced the ethos in many ways, I think. So I haven't done a lot of interviews, but I think it would be interesting to do that in a more detailed way. But I think it's more you're born with it or you come in with it, and not a lot of change. But I'd love to figure out a way to change these young guys to make them embrace the ethos more, the ones that embrace the mythos a little bit too much. The other thing that you mentioned about our Achilles heel. First, another guy I'd like to mention is Bob Carey. Some of you know this guy. He's a Yank. He happens to be a politician. He happens to be an ex-military guy. He happens to have a little celebrity in his life because he dated Deborah Winger for a while. But Bob Carey was one of the few guys who was a SEAL who won the Congressional Medal of Honor. He's got a prosthetic leg from his actions in Vietnam. And he embraces the ethos, in my opinion. Don't know if Bob agrees or these guys agree, but all you have to do is watch him in action and listen to him speak. And he eschews the limelight, and he doesn't talk about being a SEAL, and he doesn't talk about war or killing people, even though he won the Congressional Medal of Honor for his valor in Vietnam. The other thing that resonates with me is when he got up at the podium and sang, and the band played Waltzing Matilda, which many of you from Australia are very familiar with. It's a really poignant song, and there's a lot of parallels with the Dardanelles campaign, Gallipoli, and the Australians, and all these Americans going off to Afghanistan getting killed and maimed. So on YouTube, Google Bob Carey singing, and the band played Waltzing Matilda. It's a pretty moving moving song. So Bob Carey is another guy that I think epitomizes to me a guy who happens to be a Navy SEAL, was a Navy SEAL, eschews the limelight, hates the fact that these young kids are embracing the mythos more than the ethos, and really, really walks the walk. And he has a chance at coming back into political life in the United States. I hope he wins, personally. Our Achilles heel, I think, is this issue, broad issue of the character and the morality of some of the guys. And I agree it is a problem for the older guys. I include myself in that group, the leadership. Right now, Paul Berry is more junior than I am, but he's no less a part of the team. And I'm speaking for myself here mostly, I really, really am worried. And it's not a problem, it's not a real problem, but it is an issue. I'm really worried about the character development of these guys coming in and making sure that their expectations are correct, because the things that we're asking them to do overseas are incredibly challenging and nuanced. The last thing is the asked about the bright lights. What are we doing wrong? All the video was shooting guns, guys jumping out of planes, their hands were tied behind their back and their legs, and they're in the water. And relatively speaking, that's the easy part. That is the really easy part. We've got, your attrition is 75% approximately, but the 25% that make it through, they're good. They're really physically indomitable, and the things that they do as soldiers is quite remarkable, to be honest. But it's the that stuff matters, but it really doesn't matter that much. The thing that matters so much more is that their character and how they use those skills. And personally, I don't think it's I hate being characterized as somebody who kills without thinking. I think it's an incredibly acceptable thing to do, to pause before killing anyone and giving up the chance of not being called a warrior because of that. Now, that's a very small price to pay, and it's very correct to do that. And we've got a lot of guys, I think, I know Paul and I are very comfortable embracing our feminine sides, and that's what we view as a strength, not a weakness. So, and those are the kind of guys that we're trying to attract to our community, comfortable with themselves, comfortable with having the gift of introspection and accepting constructive criticism and continuing to grow. And the thing that I tell all my friends, never forget to look at the world through the eyes of a child. You know, never forget how a kid looks at the world, and that a lot of times will set you straight and see things the right way. I'd like to have Paul add anything to.
Paul, would you mind coming up? And I know we're at the time boundary, but if you have to go, give a couple. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, very good.
Real quick, thanks again very much for having me here. Captain Schultz. Appreciate it. Captain Zabowski, this is an honor. It's an unusual crowd. I'm not used to speaking with a crowd like this. Although I do remember about 15 years ago in Martha's Vineyard hanging out with Captain Zabowski talking about taking the next day off and looking for souls in Houston after he had moved to the States. So anyway, a little fun time with Knife. So what are we doing now, and how? And just real quick, so about 2 months ago, and I'm not going to get into the specifics, and I wasn't there, but I'm very familiar with the operation. A group of SEALs, a squadron of men, parachuted into an unknown drop zone in Somalia. They jump in from an aircraft at night, no visibility, probably 35,000 feet, maybe 25,000, I'm not sure. And they landed next to, they were there to rescue an American hostage and I think a Belgian hostage. So I'm sure some of you might have read about this. They landed not far from where the hostages were held. They killed the terrorist on the way in, and they rescued the American and the Canadian and yeah. Okay. Anyway, they rescued the American and the other person.
You know, the first words from the American, from what I hear, is she said, I thought you guys forgot all about us. I had no idea you knew I was here. One of the first words from the American woman was that she said that she had no idea that anybody knew where she was at and that we were still following her. So it just shows the resolve of the country and the length that we will go to go. And so anyway, 2 or 3 days later, those guys were back home. I mean, they were back home with their families. And so how do we attract a guy? How do we recruit, select, train, qualify a Navy SEAL to be the ethos-driven base guy? And how do we maintain? How do we retain that guy? How do we keep him at that level? And I tell you, those guys on that target, a lot of them have been in for probably 18 to 20 years. Probably half of those guys. So it's a much different organization. This is probably a 5-day conversation. The selection process is pretty complex. A guy can't just say, hey, I want to be a Navy SEAL. He's tested, he's selected, he has to pass certain physical qualifications. And then he goes through the BUDS process we have down here. During that process, we talk to him about the ethos. We talk to him about, you know, everything that the expectation of the battlefield. Our challenge is what we call the moral insurgency within our own organization. Guys who've been in a while and they're disgruntled, and you know that negativity can kind of reflect. The focus now is really, I think, what the biggest thing is. Again, how do we keep those guys entertained and professional? Those guys that, you know, just came back from rescuing Americans from Somalia and killing terrorists, and they come back home. It's focusing on the family. You know, no longer is the focus so much on, you know, come back and party from a big op like that. So you've got to go home and take care of your family. And they know when they're out doing that we take care of their family. And focusing on other things to keep them, you know, whether it's hobbies, whether it's triathlon, running. Again, I could ramble on and on and on about the efforts we are taking to build family resiliency and support, and everything from counseling, free counseling to families. When SEALs deploy on the battlefield and they come back a day or two before they even come back, they go out with their families, and we have family whether it's going to Disney World or whatever. Anyway, I could ramble on forever about this stuff. I don't know what's going on.
Thank you very much. Now we'll turn it back over to Bob for some closing remarks, and then I'll close the session if you bear with us.
Just one last theme that I think is worth, especially with this group, is worth talking about briefly. It's not we don't want to live, and we no longer live in a very small, insular United States military white Christian world. And we happen to be in a very small group that really, really is pushing to be inclusive, even though we want to avoid the limelight. Inclusive with our international military guys, some who are cut from the same cloth as we are, previously mentioned, and the non-military people from interagencies in the United States, agencies within the United States and from without, and people such as you that are all part of the humankind that we are trying to do the right thing with. So even though we're trying to stay out of the limelight, we prefer that the books and the movies aren't written. We need to continue this dialogue, both within the military, the interagency, and with you. You may not like the military. You may really not like what I represent, but nevertheless, I hope we can have a really interesting dialogue and find common ground and try to pursue the universal values that we all share. So that's one of the things we're really trying to do.
Really thank these gentlemen for joining me up here, providing their adding their voices. My final comment is simple. I don't believe this is an either-or, either mythos or ethos, either Achilles or Hector. I really believe that it is a both-and, that this is almost a, kind of, almost a thesis antithesis dialectic, and the ideal is somewhere in between, in the right place on that spectrum. Two are having in a symbiotic relationship, and the people that we recruit and train and prepare and send to war are going to have some of each of those. And the challenge that the leaders have and the community has is finding the right place on that spectrum. I really appreciate your thoughts. I took a lot of notes here. I know that Captain Lazowski did. And we will all stick around for a few minutes afterwards if you would like, if you had some questions or points that you didn't get a chance to make. Thank you, Ernest.
Well, I have just a couple of words to say. The first is, wow. And you've given our organization just what we most desire, which is an opportunity to engage in something extremely meaningful and hopefully be able to apply our talents to be of some assistance to noble causes. And so we have a gift for you in return. So thank you very much, Bob. We appreciate it. And thank you all. Wonderful work.